Welcome to The Avenue. This is Brittany Williams along with Doug McGill, welcoming you on this fine Sunday morning. Sorry, I jumped in. I didn't know what you were doing there. You just zoned out for a second there, Doug.
I did. I was listening to that siren and going, I think our producer had a meltdown and they're coming to get him.
It's a little Jay-Z. It's
yeah, I know. Anyway, how are you doing? It's pretty funny watching you try and make tea out of lukewarm water.
Hey, you got to make do. There's no hot water in this place. They're lucky I didn't start a fire in the kitchen to try to boil some water, so...
You'd think they'd encourage, you know, things like tea and coffee to keep their radio hosts awake, especially at night, but they're not doing that, are they?
Need to put in a request for someone to make us coffee, which I would totally do, so...
Well, that makes sense to me. Anyway, I am glad to be back. Nice you guys had a great weekend last weekend.
Yeah, you missed our 100th episode.
It was, and I'm disappointed at that, but you know, not really disappointed.
101 is just as good.
That's right, because I was away on vacation, and I thought about you guys, but I was not in a place where I was able to pick it up. I was actually in a place called Reed Harbor, which is on an island called Stewart Island in the San Juans, which are an island chain that are northwest of Puget Sound, a little south of Vancouver, just inside the Victoria Island. So it's really a wonderful place. There are just a couple other boats there. We were anchored out and put the grill on, and just a beautiful evening, and no reception, no cell phone reception, no Wi-Fi.
Sounds absolutely terrible, I said sarcastically.
Yeah, I think so. Nothing. So it was a lot of fun. But
was it just you and your family, or who all went?
Just a friend of mine and I, and we just had a great time. And we had one exciting adventure, though. We're cruising from that island to Victoria Island, which is in Canada. And we're crossing the north and southbound shipping lanes. That's where the big freighters go up there. And the engine blew out. We lost oil pressure. And simultaneously, it turns out, fog started coming in. This is ground fog from the Victoria Island started encroaching and encompassing us. And at the same time, there wasn't much wind. So I managed to get the sails up in a very short period of time. But it's not like we had a lot of motion. And, of course, then you hear fog horns. The freighters, fortunately, they were northbound freighters, but they're very loud, and particularly when you can't see anything. And then, of course, there's this weird rumbling sound, which I believe was Canadian artillery, because that's where the Canadian Navy practices its shooting. So I'm like, you know,
none of this sounds good at all.
This is spooky, but it was kind of interesting. So we managed to sail west, and they sent a boat to tow us into Roche Harbor. But the fact is that, you know, The towing company couldn't touch us until we got back into American territory. So we're about, like, rowing to get this big sailboat over there. It was really quite an interesting experience, but a lot of fun. If you ever get a chance to go to the San Juan Islands, you really should. We got to saw killer whales. We saw sea otters and seals and dolphins, and it was just gorgeous scenery, very spectacular. So it's a really wonderful place to visit. So if you get a chance, go there.
It's a ringing endorsement, but I don't know. This is now the second time you've been out on the water, and there's been some kind of disaster afoot.
There is a pattern. You've noticed that.
To never go out on a boat with you? Yeah.
You're not the first female to say that, but the reasons differ, shall we say.
Because the last time you were out sailing with your son, and how many boats or pontoons did you go through
three
in that?
Three pontoon boats. I was out with Brian. Yeah, we were fishing on Portage Lake, and we went through three pontoon boats before we got one that worked properly.
At what point do you realize that it's user error and not the actual boat?
Well, you can call it user error. At that point, there was, one boat had seaweed in the water intake that cools the engine, and I didn't quite know where to look for that, so that could be considered user error. The second one was the shift lever just didn't work right. Nah, that's not user error. And the third one finally worked right. Now, the only problem with that whole adventure was we didn't catch any fish.
Messing around with the boats.
Yeah, we spent the whole day messing around with boats. But, you know, there were things to do. As the wind in the willows said one time, there's nothing so wonderful as messing around with boats. So being out in the water and doing stuff like that. Anyway, I was really pleased to come back to some warm weather because it was rainy and cold several mornings out there. It was nice to come back to a kind of Indian summer here. Was it like that all week last week?
It's been gorgeous all week here.
Isn't that wonderful? picked a good week to leave, didn't I?
Yeah, because now as soon as you come back, it's going to start snowing.
Thank you so much. But anyway, one of the things that was really nice when I picked up the Plain Dealer this morning, I saw their endorsement of Jack Schron. It was right on the cover of the forum section, and they wrote a very nice article. I think it was very well done. It was avoided some of the other things that could be said about this campaign, but it was above the line, shall we say. It was nice to see it.
And it was very good. You know, they released it earlier this week, and it was just nice to see, you know, one of the reasons I support Jack is, you know, the nonpartisanship and just the leadership that he could bring to the county, and to see that the editorial board picked up on that during the interview process was great.
They really did, and it is true that Jack really cares about the city and will do whatever it takes, and I believe he would work well with Mayor Jackson and with the Democratic members of the city council or the county council. And, you know, they did point out, although they didn't push the subject, that Armand Budish does, in fact, have a lot of party connections. He's a party advocate. And that you know, and when we go back to, we just escaped this corruption that went back for years, and not accusing Mr. Budish of such a thing. It's just that it happens slowly, and it does it sort of incrementally. And, you know, I think Ed Fitzgerald found out that when he brought in someone to be his finance director, and she had not reported some income or stuff. Well, you know, that's what happens when you rely on party loyalists and things. All of a sudden you get people in there that, you know, may be connected properly but may not have the right background and experience that you want. And that's how it happens. All of a sudden people just, you know, make things slide just a little bit. And we're right back where we were. And I'm not saying that Budish would do that, but when your primary loyalty is to party rather than to place, I think that's what happens.
It clouds your judgment.
Yeah, it does. So I would hope not. But anyway, that's why Jack is such a good candidate. He really is nonpartisan in that respect, and I can see him appointing people that may be Democrats to key positions because the best ones for it. Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't spoken of that, so don't read anything into it.
I mean, when you look at the people in Cleveland, leaders that are still to this day admired and respected, like Senator Voinovich, I mean, he's the first person to tell you that when he was mayor, how much flack he was getting, especially from the Republican Party, because that was his entire thing of, I want people in my administration who are the best people for the job. I don't care what party you are. I don't care where you came from, who you know. It's, I want the best people for the job. So his administration, when he was mayor of Cleveland, was completely mixed and completely bipartisan. But then because it was so diverse and bipartisan, it was almost nonpartisan. The fact that party didn't matter in decisions. Everyone was there working to better the city. And I think the city grew and obviously was better for it. And that's kind of how Senator Voinovich has always run things, moving from mayor of Cleveland to governor of Ohio and then to senator.
He meant it. And I can recall people talking about that, that he really ran kind of a nonpartisan administration. And I don't think people thought of it as a Republican administration. And I think if Jack were to win the county executive seat, people would think of him as nonpartisan and the county government as nonpartisan. I know Jack himself has suggested that we should make the race for county executive a nonpartisan one. There are a lot of people that have a lot invested in that, and you know more than anyone else, I think, around, that party politics is all the networking and who knows who business, and that isn't always the best thing, is it?
It's a mixed bag, but to Jack's point of 56 out of the 58 municipalities in Cuyahoga County have nonpartisan elections.
Yeah.
So if everyone is dropping the R and the D when they vote for mayor, when they vote for city council, why not do that on the county level as well?
And I think it would make for more interesting races, too, don't you? I think, and it also changes the way you do fundraising. And one of the things that Budish does very well is fundraising, because he's such a good party loyalist, and he's well connected to a lot of Democrats here. It would change the fundraising aspect of the whole thing if it were a nonpartisan election. It'd be kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, I don't see it changing the fundraising at all.
No.
Coming from fundraising world, it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm an optimist. You're a realist.
Total realist. Money is behind everything.
We have discovered that before, haven't we? All right, now I have to ask you a question. You know, there's been another release of pictures from the Apple iCloud of actresses and
famous. Is this round three, I believe?
I believe so. And, you know, what's going on here? I think this is, it's kind of interesting, A, that it happened, but even more interesting that people make such a big deal out of it. You know, what's, so what?
I think it's just, it's the whole salacious factor of it. I mean, it's
nice,
but
word.
I mean, yeah, but I think the last round of pictures, they're releasing pictures of people fully clothed. So right. at that, I mean, really at this point, are you just demonstrating, look what you have the power to do. You have the power to hack into these systems and, you know, break down firewalls and whatever. So, I mean, you're to demonstrate that your information's not secure. Like, I don't understand the point of it at this point.
Yeah, I really don't either. And, you know, other than the fact that some people like to look at those pictures, I mean, why pander to that at all? That, you know, that's the way the world works these days.
And it is a shame to the people who have had their images stolen because no one deserves that.
Well, they don't. I would think that they'd feel that their privacy's been invaded. I mean, they believed that the iCloud was secure. And for instance, you know, if you took pictures or had pictures taken of you and you kept them in your house, you would assume that your privacy is there, one way or the other. There's nothing different from that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody broke in and stole those things and, you know, started passing them around, you'd have a right to be embarrassed and a little concerned about who's going to see these and what it means to you long term. Now, fortunately, these people in Hollywood, most of those things are not truly too secret anyway. But, you know, I don't know. I guess you can't make a judgment about people's tastes and what they want to take pictures of. So that being said, there ought to be some belief in privacy there.
Well, you would think. But I think nowadays everyone feels that everyone's information is, especially when they're Hollywood stars and things, there is no sense of privacy. We just kind of take it for granted that, you know, they're in the public eye and we should have access to everything. And unfortunately, that includes private moments that they have on their phones.
Yeah, that they shouldn't have uploaded anyway. But that being said, they should have a belief in their own privacy. Are we better or worse for that?
I think far worse. I think that we're living in a society where there's no lines anymore. There's no respect anymore.
There's no shame either.
No.
And that's
the other thing, too. And it's funny to see the people whose privacy has been violated, how they're reacting to this. Because you have some of them that are denying it, some of them that are going, you know, to the feds who are going to sue for an invasion of privacy. Then others, I think, are happy to potentially get the boost.
Yeah, that's right. For some, it's an improvement in their their portfolio. And the first thing they do is call their agent. Hey, guess what? Well, anyway, we're going to talk a little bit more about things like that later on in the show, but we have an interesting guest from Northeast Ohio Media Group coming up, and join us for fantasy football as well. This is The Avenue.
The Avenue Radio Show on AM 1420. The Answer.
Welcome back to The Avenue. If you have a question for us or our guest coming up, feel free to give us a call at 216-901-0945. And be sure to check us out on social media at The Avenue Radio on Twitter and then on Facebook, too. As Doug mentioned, we have a wonderful guest with us this evening from the Northeast Ohio Media Group. We're here with Andrew Tobias. Andrew is a reporter. He covers currently Cuyahoga County government. And he's also covered local, state, and federal government for newspapers in the Dayton area and also the state of Delaware. So
Delaware, Ohio, actually.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, the better Delaware, as I like to call it.
Yeah, me too. I saw that in your brief bio in the Plain Dealer, and I thought, Delaware? What the heck was he doing there? Now
yeah,
I get it.
It's God's country.
Yeah, where is Delaware, Ohio, just to ask?
It is due north of Columbus, up Route 23. People might be more familiar with 71, but 23 is the direct connection from Columbus to Delaware. It's about 20 miles north.
Yeah, well, I take 23 to and from Ann Arbor a lot.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It's not too bad from Toledo up to Ann Arbor. From Ann Arbor or from Toledo south, it's not too good either. Anyway, well, welcome to the show, Andrew. It's really nice of you to join us. If people have listened to the show, know I have a fascination with the media and talking about what's going on in the current world and stuff like that. But where'd you go to school?
I went to Otterbein, actually. It's it's in Westerville, which is a suburb of Columbus. It's actually the birthplace of Prohibition in America, but not Otterbein, the town. But yeah, so I went there, graduated in 2008.
Interesting. I don't think I've ever met a graduate of Otterbein before. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Huh. I'm trying to think. Like, there's a smattering of well-known Otterbein graduates. The one that immediately comes to mind is Paul O'Neill, the former New York Yankees outfielder. I think he played for the Reds too. But there's a few of us out there. It's 2,000 students or something like that. So it kind of adds up over the years.
Yeah, there is a geometric progression here somewhere.
Exactly.
But anyway, so did you grow up in Columbus?
I my dad actually is a Methodist minister, so the way that the church works is if a minister retires somewhere, they kind of shuffle the deck and move people around to fill in the holes. So that meant that I moved every 3 to 4 years of my life growing up.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I grew up reading The Plain Dealer primarily. So Summit and Stark County is where I spent like the first 15 years of my life, more or less. I made my home in Columbus after school and graduated and stuck around. Besides some time I spent in Dayton, I was in Columbus more or less for 7 or 8 years, which is the longest I've ever been in any single place.
Now, were you working in media at that time?
So I was working for the Delaware Gazette is what the newspaper is called there. It's a circulation of about 3,000, something like that.
On a good day.
Yeah, right. But I worked for the Dayton Daily News and their Columbus Bureau for a spell. And then I also unfortunately commuted from Columbus to Dayton for not longer than I preferred. So that was
also a miserable drive.
Yeah, that was rough. At least I wasn't going to Ann Arbor, but you know.
I totally agree with
you. Ann Arbor's a lovely city, actually.
Well, it is. It's just a little wacky for my taste. But I know my brother lives in Ann Arbor, so that's why I go there frequently. And I've gotten to go to a few University of Michigan football games there, which are always interesting. 110,000 people packed into this bowl. And it's really quite a spectacle. I've gotten to see Ohio State win a few games there, too, which is always enjoyable. Anyway, so you really did start in the media business kind of out of college.
I did.
Was that a dream of yours?
I'm sorry?
Was that a dream of yours?
A dream. I don't know. A dream makes it sound a little bit too highfalutin, I guess, for what it really was. But it's something that I enjoyed doing. And I interned at a few Columbus area newspaper type places in school. So it was basically the job I was able to get. And it's actually something that I sort of stumbled into because I like to write, but I've kind of stayed with it because I've found that I'm truly passionate about it. So it's something that, like I said, kind of started as just something that I could do. And it's something that I've stuck with, and it's worked out really well.
The way you say that makes me wonder, are there other things that you didn't stick with?
I mean, I think the reason why journalism works for me and a lot of people that continue to do it is that it lets you kind of dabble in stuff. I mean, I imagine actually politics is probably similar. There's other jobs like that out there, but I'm a generalist and I enjoy learning about a lot of things. But I don't necessarily like, I'm really good at trivia night, you know, and that kind of thing. But I don't actually have any useful skills or anything like that I've mastered. So.
Well, in a way, that's kind of why I enjoyed getting into systems analysis, because you don't have to be an expert at anything. You just have to understand enough to make changes and then go do something else. And journalism's like that. Is that what you studied in college, journalism?
It was, actually, yeah. And if there's any would-be journalists out there, I wouldn't actually recommend studying journalism. I think it's something that you can kind of like knock out in, you know, just basically through experience. So the most useful experience I had in college was actually writing for my school paper, which is really the way to go.
So actually doing something hands-on as opposed to just taking classes.
Yeah, you can't. I don't remember anything from school, like as far as my classes go.
Like most people.
Right.
I remember some of my teachers, but I can't say I remember an awful lot of stuff. Now I did a degree in psychology and English, but it's the writing skills that I think stay with you.
Yeah,
and as you do more of it, you get better at it. It's like a lot of other professions, but it's a useful skill to have. In fact, recently met somebody that's in advertising that was interested in communications, but his professors pushed him into English to get a degree in English because the writing skills would be more valuable later on.
Yeah,
and I think of you, Brittany, when I think about things like that because you write so well. Did you study English in college as a minor or something like that?
No. It's political science, international studies, and Spanish.
None of those people know how to write. So what the heck happened to you?
Hey, I've always been a good writer. I started doing creative writing. Being an Ohio person, were you familiar with Power of the Pen?
Can't say that I am.
It's a middle school creative writing competition.
Oh, yeah.
For the entire state. So I participate in that. And basically what it is you show up and you sit down and they write a prompt on the chalkboard and you've got an hour to write a story about the prompt, and you have to do that three times during the day, and then
this is middle school.
Middle school.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I've heard of Power of the Pen. I think a couple of my kids got involved in that, but it's quite challenging and pretty interesting.
So between that and then good professors who ripped apart my essays and things like that and just taught me how to write.
Well, I think that's right. One of the big influences for me are a couple of guys in high school, a guy named Mac and Father Robert Farrell, that really were very attuned to good writing skills and make you focus on the point and how you structure your argument and then put it down on paper. So I'm surprised a journalist knows how to write. I'm sorry.
It's actually an overrated skill in journalism.
Yeah, I know.
You really can't learn, like I was saying, how I didn't necessarily learn what I know to be successful in my field in school. You really can't learn how to get yelled at about a story, you know, and on 10 o'clock on a Friday night until it actually happens to you. So it's really, it's all the other stuff that kind of goes with it as far as, you know, learning how to kind of stick to your guns and how to navigate relationships with people and that kind of stuff that is really the most important part, I think.
Well, I would think interviewing skills are very important, right, too. Asking the right questions in the right way and not being thrown off by the answer. I think that's an important skill.
Yeah, I don't necessarily consider myself to be that strong of a writer, but it's... you know, I think I've gotten better at the other stuff as I've kind of kept doing it. So,
I think I read that somewhere that the best journalists are not the best writers; they're the best interviewers, and I think that's an interesting way to look at it. Now, when did you join the Plain Dealer? Or actually, you're part of Northeast Ohio Media
right.
Group.
Yeah, I've worked for the Northeast. I told my grandma I work for the Plain Dealer, just sort of a shorthand. But I've worked at the Northeast Ohio Media Group for about a year. I started in early September of last year.
Wow, so you really haven't been there long.
Nope. Yeah, I'm a newbie.
Well, that must be quite a change from the Dayton Daily News. And
It's actually really, what I do is pretty much exactly the same everywhere I've gone. It's just kind of a matter of like scale, I guess, as far as the number of readers that you have and stuff like that. But
Or the attacking emails and messages that you get.
Yeah, it's just the
volume's gone up.
I appreciate the attention. It's nice to be noticed. So, but... So the biggest difference for me, my assignment before I got here was I covered the state government for the Dayton Daily News. And I think in Columbus, like, people had heard a rumor of Dayton existing, but didn't necessarily care all that much. And I think the feeling is mutual. So here, you know, I am likely to just run into somebody that might actually, you know, I live in Cuyahoga County. I cover Cuyahoga County. So it's just different. It's more, directly impactful, I think, of the people I actually kind of just like rub elbows with on a daily basis.
Well, people like us.
For instance, yeah, exactly.
It is a completely different environment, too, just being down in Columbus, because they don't really know where Dayton is, but they don't really think of anything actually outside of Columbus.
Right. Actually, they don't think of anything outside of the 270 Interbelt thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, and then if you get to Capitol Square, they don't think of anything outside of like a two-block radius.
So that's what happens to our representatives when they get elected and sent down to Columbus.
Yeah, they never come back.
They just disappear into that black hole.
You check in, but you don't check out.
Hotel, it's like Congress, the United States, yeah. Unfortunately, I think that's true. A lot of times, you know, the focus of your intensity and energy is that place, you know, the government. And somehow or another, getting connected to your constituents becomes harder and harder, doesn't it? The only people that don't get caught up in that are the ones that don't stay long. Abraham Lincoln comes to mind.
Yeah, okay.
Don't know really where you were going with that
point,
Doug.
Yeah, exactly.
Doug,
I don't think he left like politicians really, want, you know,
well,
prefer
not
to
really
leave
go out on a good note. No.
Well, no, but
he's a great man.
He only had one term in Congress.
Yes, I understand.
That's when I was going with that. All right.
Yeah, about sums that up.
You can thank our producer for that. We'll speak later. All right, anyway, but, you know, so you didn't do much in the way of history or, you know, the kind of stuff that, that gives you perspective on your articles.
No, I read history. I mean, I'm reading currently The Bully Pulpit. It's a book about Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft. And there's also a subplot about journalism. I haven't gotten there yet, but... The subtitle of the book is The Golden Age of Journalism, and it's about the sort of hand-in-hand of, I think, like the progressive reformist movement of like the early 20th century, along with the muckraking, crusading journalists out there who wanted to, as opposed to just kind of like report the news. They actually think wanted to shape the news more. But again, I'm just kind of guessing. I haven't actually gotten there in the book yet.
Well, actually, that becomes a great segue into talking about new media and what that means to the landscape here. Because going back to the muckraking days, there's a lot of precedent back there for things that people abhor today, but it's really not that unusual. So anyway, we can talk about that when we come back and a few other things relative to new media.
Can't wait.
All right, you're listening live to The Avenue. Stay tuned.
This is The Avenue on AM 1420. The Answer.
And it is indeed The Avenue, your highway to intellectual development here. We're talking with Andrew Tobias, a reporter with Northeast Ohio Media Group. And, of course, with us is the elegant Brittany Williams. And, Andrew, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about a book you were reading called The Bully Pulpit and about muckraking and yellow journalism. You know, people think there's a lot of weird things going on in journalism today, but they don't realize how, you know, ugly it was in those days. I can remember reading about the Civil War and the things that were written about Abraham Lincoln. There was a lot of more than policy differences in those articles, weren't there?
You know, I remember I read somewhere last week, and so this, you know, this is the hazard of me going on live radio that I could repeat something that's not true, but I read that there was a headline in a newspaper in the 18th article, something like Old Man Withers' horse died, and you'll never believe what happened next, like as if it was a clickbait in Ye Old Town Journal or whatever. So the things that people, I think, are worried about, you know, are things that probably been happening throughout, you know, they're cyclical in history and stuff like that.
Well, there were. And when you talk about muckrakers, there are people that would dig up stories or invent stories about people. So integrity has been a problem in the journalism world for a long time. This is nothing new if people are concerned about, you know, either MSNBC or Fox News. You know, everybody brings a bias to the table.
Well, I think the problem, though, now is just the fact that we're in a 24-hour cycle,
news cycle
where there is no downtime. And if something false goes out, it's really hard to take it back.
Well, it is, and we've seen that several times. On the other hand, there is an opportunity to do some really interesting investigative journalism. And I go back to the old Dan Rather story that you know, there were some records relative to George W. Bush's service in the military that turned out to have been fabricated, and it was the online media that kind of determined the technical explanation for that and why that was a false story. So it really made a difference in terms of the story breaking. And of course, it cost Dan Rather his job, too, didn't it?
Yeah, it's not clear to me kind of, you know, how you can really say which part of the story gets people's attention the most. But I actually think that, by and large, or at least one of the things that can happen with the new media landscape is that actually you can have the internet kind of fact-checking, quote-unquote, real mm-hmm. journalists and kind of setting them straight. You know, Dan Rather was came from an era where somebody like that was kind of like it came from God to Dan Rather to millions of Americans. And, you know, we have a lot of different intermediaries in between that now because of the way things work.
Well, you do. And that does, I think, tends to jog things towards honesty. But the road is bumpy, at times, I'm sure.
To say the least.
Yeah. Now, you're kind of a political junkie, you said, I think.
I'm a political enthusiast. Junkie kind of has a connotation of like being out of control or something like that. But it's something that I enjoy.
Okay. And so you're right in the thick of it now. You're covering county politics for the Plain Dealer, and I bet that's been an interesting experience. You've been here a year, so you haven't dealt with all of the things that, relative to the corruption that we've had.
Yeah, I'm sad I wasn't here for that stuff. It would have been really interesting. I mean,
As a journalist.
Right, as a journalist, not as a citizen, right.
But have you read up a bunch on that to understand what we've dealt with?
Oh, yeah. My parents actually lived in Parma Heights for, I believe, 7 years, and they were here right in the thick of that stuff. So not only I was interested because it impacted my parents, and I care about Cleveland too. I, you know, always kind of aligned to Northeast Ohio and Cleveland specifically, but also it's a really interesting story, and I, you know, I'm drawn to interesting stories even if I don't have a connection to it. But that was a good story. I mean, it was a bad situation, but it was a good story.
Well, I understand the difference, and that's an interesting perspective to have on it. But it was interesting from an outsider standpoint. But, you know, it's that corruption went on a long time. And the fact that it finally came out, one of the questions people have is, well, what happened to the plain dealer? Why weren't they on this earlier? And sometimes people just don't ask questions if they don't, you know the right questions to ask.
Yeah, I wasn't here for that, so I don't really have a great perspective as far as what the reasons are and stuff like that. But I think that having an organization like the FBI come in and, you know, doesn't really have any allegiances to anybody. And I think, you know, having that outsider's perspective can actually, you know, I think that's facilitated a big part of how they're able to make everything work.
Yeah, you're also have a little fascination. You told us during the break that you were interested in tax policy, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So seriously, where did this come from?
It's just a matter of I haven't had the opportunity to really specialize in some kind of topic. Like for instance, you know, news outlets will have a healthcare reporter, or they'll have an economic development reporter, or they'll have transportation and stuff like that, where they really focus on a specific topic. I've always covered government kind of writ large. And so when I was in Columbus, basically I was the third person in a three-person bureau, and as a new job that was actually created for me. And so I kind of had to just pick up whatever and nobody else really was taking on. And so I just developed an interest in that stuff. And, you know, it's not that hard for me to get interested in something. But
that's a gift. You know, a good reporter, I think, has to have that innate curiosity, even if you don't understand the subject, the willingness to kind of ask questions.
I think most people coming in and, you know, like you said, you were the third person getting kind of the hand-me-down stories. Most people would just not have that interest or develop it.
No, that's fascinating. I think that's great. But one of the untold stories that we're not hearing in this campaign between Governor Kasich and Ed Fitzgerald is, you know, economic policy. The Kasich campaign is kind of pushing out, you know, that we've improved the economy in Ohio.
It's a miracle, I heard.
Well, must have been talking to Kasich's press secretary.
Yeah, I've heard that lately, but yeah.
but the underpinnings of that, well, what made that happen? And, of course, we had this whole discussion about taxes where, you know, the income tax was reduced, but sales taxes were increased. Well, okay. Was that really something that helped improve the economy, or would other things have helped more? I mean, do you have a thought about that?
I know what you hear and what the rationale for trying to change or just mess around with the income tax in general. I mean, when Governor Kasich was elected, he actually basically came in and said, I want to get rid of the income tax. And that was employers will say that's one of the things that they potentially look at when they're considering the myriad of factors that they consider when they want to locate somewhere. Unfortunately, getting rid of the income tax would cripple the state's budget. So just hacking it out completely, I think they determined wasn't really feasible. And so I think what they're trying to do is gradually kind of scale it one way with the other. And by increasing the sales tax, you're kind of taxing economic activity and consumption, I guess. Yeah. And there's a school of thought that really is kind of behind that. It's more along the lines of some of the tax proposals that I think are coming out there from conservative groups and stuff like that. But in terms of just, you know, I can't remember the details. I didn't do my homework to come in here to, you know, get the specifics. But I think they increased the sales tax rate by 0.25% or something like that. And
all right, we're going to pick that up as soon as we come back. We're talking with Andrew Tobias of Northeast Ohio Media Group. We're going to talk a little bit more about tax policy and the effects on the state of Ohio. This is The Avenue.
Hi, this is Kevin O'Brien from The Plain Dealer, and when I'm not answering reader emails, I'm hanging out on the Avenue.
Yeah, that's pretty neat to have Kevin O'Brien give us a little promotion there, a little editorial board comment. Do you deal with Kevin at all?
I don't think I've ever met him, actually. No, the news side and the opinion side are pretty segregated.
Separate. All right. And we're speaking with Andrew Tobias, who is with Northeast Ohio Media Group. And if you have any comments or thoughts, give us a call, 216-901-0945, or tweet us at The Avenue Radio, or post us on Facebook as well. Same handle.
That's why usually Darvio does the social media breakdown. Just saying.
Just saying. All right. I think I just got slashed there. Let me recover and move on. Andrew, we were talking a little bit about tax policy, and it's one of the
undiscovered
well, it's an undiscovered area of the campaign, because Fitzgerald has not been able to, you know, generate much interest in this campaign, unfortunately, lately. But the question is, you know, you're talking a little bit about consumption taxes versus income taxes, and I do think that is the direction that the Kasich administration wants to go.
Right, and so to tie my thought off, it's, you know, is what he did going to just drastically change anybody's life today or in a year from now? No, not really. I did the math, and the difference for an average family of four was something like $30 a year that they actually netted gained. And so, oh boy, I got $30. I can, you know, fill up gas once more or whatever. But the idea is it's sort of a philosophical direction that he's taking the state in. And if you play that out over time, then you can actually kind of, you know, build a case for it. But that's, yeah, so that's why he did it. And did it have an impact? Nah, not really. Probably not.
Well, from a competitive standpoint, he's looking at rankings, you know, how Ohio compares to other states in all these different categories. You know, if we're talking about businesses, when you compare to the Carolinas or Florida or something like that, it makes a difference since there's no income tax, particularly as people get older and they're thinking about taking their money somewhere else. And one of the things that Ohio doesn't have is doesn't have a lot of sunshine.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
So, I know. Anyway, so that's something to be talking about as we go forward a little bit. I'm very interested to hear, you know, what he's going to be talking about as he goes into the next term.
Well, there is an election in November, Doug. It hasn't been decided.
Okay. We'll see.
For that stark reminder.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, a couple weeks out. Anyway, but what is the thing that has fascinated you the most, being here the year that you have, working for the Plain Dealer?
The thing that I like the most about Cleveland that's been most interesting? So I didn't really expect this to be the case. Maybe it's obvious for people who live here, but there's almost like a current within the political structure here of sympathy for Jimmy DeMora, which as a...
Interesting.
As an observer from the outside, you know, he's almost like a character in a gangster movie or something like that. Like, not like the killing people part, but like the other stuff. You know, I think the motif was really kind of comparable. And what you hear is, and I guess this is what happens when somebody that you personally know gets sentenced to 29 years in prison. People feel bad that he's, you know, he didn't do anything that nobody else did, or, you know, it wasn't as bad as what blah, blah, blah did. There's people who, you know, almost are apologetic, I guess, for him, which is difficult for me to understand. But like I said, maybe that's just a function of actually having some kind of personal connection here as opposed to just kind of being clinical. And
well, and Jimmy was really good at that, right? Having that personal connection in different communities, across different lines and networks and everything. Everyone knew him. He was always kind of the first person to help you get stuff done.
And
so,
I hear like he would, you know, and this goes a long way with reporters as far as winning their hearts and minds, but mm-hmm. he would answer reporters' phone calls and then call them back. And he would give a quote when one was needed. And, you know, so people in my line of work have good things to say about him, just strictly in terms of, you know, how he was to work with. I mean, things kind of went downhill towards the end. It's, you know, throwing reporters out of public meetings and that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
you know,
but that was after things started breaking for
right.
him. But, you know, he went for a long time on charm and connections, and that's one of the things we have to worry about. And we need people like you to be paying attention to this as we go forward and looking at county government. We want to make sure we've got a good county government and old habits don't reassert themselves here.
I would, you know, I'm very interested if something like that is happening. I mean, it's, I'm almost, like I kind of said this earlier, and this is maybe sort of, I don't know, like cynical of me, but I'm kind of sad almost that all the corruption seems to be gone just because it's more difficult for me to find things to write about. But yeah, it's something that I do believe that based on my observation here that the real institutional corruption has been dismantled. I'm sure there are instances of things that are happening and that are kind of flying under the radar. But as far as I do believe that the culture has been changed, you know, whether it sets back in, you know, like I said, some of that, the same line of thinking that makes one feel sorry for Jimmy DeMora, you know, I see some
of that shows how easy it is for it to happen.
Right. And I see some of the old guard people, they kind of still think about things in those terms, but they just don't have like their hands aren't on the lever of the power anymore kind of thing. So it's something that could easily reassert itself. And it's something that, you know, we will have to remain vigilant for as time goes on.
And in your opinion, what would be kind of the best protection against the old guard and the old institutions and everything coming back?
You really can't, you know, so like, I think people looked at county reform, and I do think it's a superior form of government compared to what we had before. Just strictly speaking, as a journalist, I think that there's a lot more transparency and accountability kind of built into it. But if you look at what happened in Summit County, where they reformed their government in the early 80s in a similar fashion, I believe that it was in response to a corruption scandal, and then one had time to kind of like incubate and then erupt into a second corruption scandal, you know, so it's really not, people are fallible, and that kind of stuff is just going to bubble up no matter what. So I think just the most important thing is to be engaged and, you know, to hold people accountable when, you know, when you see something, you call it out.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about the role of the media, particularly relative to this new county government. We're speaking with Andrew Tobias of Northeast Ohio Media Group, and this is The Avenue. We'll be back.
The Avenue Radio Show.
Welcome back to The Avenue, and we are here with Andrew Tobias from the Northeast Ohio Media Group, and also now joining us on the phone, we have our MIA co-host, Darvio Moro. Darvio, you there?
What up, though?
Hey. So
what's
we're just
going on? How are my people doing? I miss y'all.
Well, we miss you, too. You know, we haven't talked about you. Now, is that because, is that why you're calling? Because we haven't talked about you enough yet?
Well, I just got out of the Ohio Hip Hop Awards, so I was like, you know, this would be a perfect time to call and check in with my people and, you know,
well,
let everybody know how's it going.
Well, tell us what happened at the Ohio Hip Hop Awards. I didn't realize those were tonight, so I'm glad you were there.
Yes, it was a good show. I mean, I think it's just fantastic to be in a room full of artists, you know, like, people, whether you're an artist or whether you're someone who produces, or like there was a vendor who is making water bottles that have LED lights in them. So, you know, like it was just so many people from all different backgrounds, all different races, ages, men and women. And, you know, it was a cool experience. There was one story where a guy, he had just started coming to the Hip Hop Awards about 2 years ago, and his name was Buffy the Buckeye Boss. And he, when he first came, he didn't win an award or whatever. I don't even think he was nominated. And he told his brother that he wanted to step his game up so that he could get nominated for an award. Next time, 4 months later, his brother died. And today, you know, 2 years later, he finally got himself up to the point in his career where he won not one, but two hip hop awards tonight. And the first one, when he won the first one, he was very emotional. Like it was something to see. So it's just looking at a lot of the stories behind the people that make this music, and just the, you know, it meant a lot. These awards, for people who may not know, the Ohio Hip Hop Awards meant a lot to a lot of people. You know, these are artists, predominantly, you know, independent artists who have a hard time getting their music played on traditional radio and really don't have too many platforms. So this tonight was a night where the artists could just be able to shine. So it was a beautiful night. We're actually headed to the after party right now. So it ain't over yet.
Well, this is where some of the real networking begins, isn't it?
That's right, exactly. And you know, I have DeAndre Cato in the car right now, and Jeremy Merritt, who is Devon's brother. You know, so we're getting ready to go and spend some time. We've seen a bunch of friends for the Avenue. You know, we saw Callie Miles and Bobby Champagne. We saw Jay Gray, who did a television interview with us a few months back. So it was just a lot of people. Rick Sickman, who was on the show, and Dre just hollered, now we're about to see a lot of twerking.
Well, we'll look for the video later.
Absolutely. And you can go on Instagram at TheKingpin, by the way, and go see some of the pictures. And now that I've been able to charge my phone back up, because my phone almost completely died, I will be posting more pictures from the after party. And you can follow me at the King.
Well, I think that's great. And by the way, I'm assuming that you are connecting with several people that we can have as guests on the show later on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a industry friend of mine. His name is Citizen Richie, and he's basically like, yo, man, let me know whenever you want to come, whenever you want me to come to the show. And, you know, he's doing big things right now, and, you know, I got a couple of other business cards and things like that, always marketing the Avenue. I got a stack of my Avenue cards with me, so, you know, I'm out here working, y'all.
Well, we know that. We every time you go out on Friday and Saturday night, we know that you're working on behalf of the Avenue. It's a tough job. It's a tough job, but we know you're up for it.
And actually, it's kind of tough today because I'm on only a couple of hours sleep. Yesterday, I took my godson to go see the Indians game. I was doing the, you know, doing the good thing. And this morning, I was on the Good Time 3, so I'm on a few hours of sleep right now. But I'm out here working for y'all.
Well, we really appreciate that. So make a lot of connections. We'll have, you know, a real study of the Northeast Ohio hip-hop business when we get a chance over the next few shows. Uh-oh, our producer is shaking his head, and we'll be talking about that. Anyway, that was Darvio Morrow, our missing co-host here on The Avenue, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more in the next few weeks. Thanks, Darvio. You have a great night, all right? Be careful.
All right, take care, you guys. See you, Brittany.
See ya.
All right.
Okay. And apparently we have 30 seconds left?
Oh, nope, sorry, I'm wrong. Looking at the wrong clock, which happens occasionally. But it's nice that Darvio's going out and doing stuff like that. He really does take it seriously, and he's probably making a lot of connections. So we'll be seeing some of these hip-hop award winners here on The Avenue in the next few weeks, which will be kind of interesting. Maybe at some point in time I'll really get to understand it. Now, I know there's been a challenge laid out, so sometime I'm going to have to read the lyrics for a hip-hop song here on The Avenue.
I just thought if you needed help, I'm around.
Well, yeah, we can get that, too. Thank you, Marilyn. It would be very interesting to have her read a hip-hop song, wouldn't it be?
I don't want to hear that, so. But I guess going back to the guest that we have sitting here still.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Well,
it was a nice little interlude for Darvio for a little bit, but kind of going back.
We have just a little bit of time left, so what we'll do is we'll hold Andrew on for another few seconds, and we'll talk to you a little bit more about a couple of things. And with that being said, if you have any questions, give us a call, 216-901-0945, or tweet at The Avenue Radio, or you can send us a message on Facebook at The Avenue Radio. And the next segment, by the way, we'll talk with Andrew a little bit more, and we are also going to be talking about our fantasy football league, and, you know, I haven't had a chance to look at it. I'm really embarrassed as to what it may look like. But
you're in last place.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, but we'll talk about that. Antoine is smiling, and he's going to give it to me hard. All right, gentlemen, we'll be back on The Avenue.
And welcome back. You're here for the second hour of The Avenue. This is Brittany Williams along with Doug McGill, and we have Andrew Tobias still in studio. Talk a little bit more about county government and some of the issues facing the Cleveland area.
Well, one of the things that has been interesting to me is, some of the county council races haven't gotten a lot of attention in terms of, the paper itself. Is that by design, or just they don't think the races are interesting enough to report on? Or?
Yeah, actually, I've written about the races a little bit anyways. I don't necessarily have control over what the newspaper decides to publish and where they put it and stuff like that. But generally speaking, the races are not extremely competitive. If you look at the historical, which granted, is short history, but if you look at previous elections for the districts that are up for re-election this year, I think the closest race was in, I'm not good at the numbers, but Dave Greenspan's district, and I believe
district
it was
one.
60 to 40 or 55-45 or something like that. It was, maybe it was even 65-35. And in that case, the Democratic candidate, although I'm sure well-intentioned, has not been campaigning particularly actively. So it's, to some extent, it's not possible for us to cover every race that happens in granular detail, but to some extent, too, I think it's a function over, you know, how do we want to allocate our resources towards a particular story? And in that case, there's not been a whole lot going on. So,
all right. Interesting. Now, when this is a personal question now. Do you read internet blogs yourself to get news and interest? What kind of blogs do you read?
I have a RSS feed. Are you familiar with RSS feeds? So I subscribe to probably 100 different RSS feeds, and I have a reader that sorts them out in different things for me.
Which reader do you use?
Feedly.
Okay.
I did use Google Reader, and then they killed it.
I know. I can't imagine that they did that.
Yeah, it was tough. And then actually Feedly, which for people listening at home, it aggregates a bunch of different subscriptions that you sign up for, and Feedly had a hacker take it down over and over and over again, and I was really sad, but I didn't really have anybody to talk to about it because it's just so nerdy and specific. So, but yeah, I'm a big reader. I read a mix of blogs, and I subscribe to a lot of traditional media outlets through my RSS subscription stuff too.
Well, sometimes you do find news that's happened that you don't find anywhere else. Certainly not with the standard news outlets. And I'm not claiming political bias. It's just they only have so much bandwidth. And sometimes you find out things that, you know, for instance, recently there's a story that Al-Qaeda terrorists took over a Pakistani naval vessel. I haven't seen that in any of the mainstream media, but I've cross-referenced it with two or three different sites that there was, in fact, an occasion where that happened. And that's really kind of nightmare stuff, where you see terrorists getting a hold of modern military weapons one way or another. That would be interesting.
To say the least, I guess, yeah.
Anyway, so, but you're a believer in the new media. Do you blog yourself at all, other than for the Plain Dealer?
Not actively. It's something that I've done before. The thing that I'm most likely to blog about is pop culture, because I think it's, or maybe even sports a little bit. It's a safe space for me to kind of share my opinions about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never gonna, you know, I make no apologies for being a Browns fan, so I'm gonna root against the Steelers today, and I don't know if anybody in this room, you know, agrees with me on that. But so with that kind of stuff, you know, it's something that is not very likely to really touch anything I'm ever going to professionally have to cover. So it's kind of nice to be able to cut loose a little bit. But haven't blogged about news or current events for quite some time. It's something that I did more before, but to some extent, like, it's not like I write all day and want to go home like, oh boy, what do I need to do now? You know, let's write some more. So, but
well, how much of your time is actually spent writing? I think you have to do a lot of research. You know, you go out and interview people.
True. Yeah. I guess the act of committing journalism kind of all feels the same when you kind of flatten it all out. But so to answer your question, I typically write one to two stories a day, and that, you know, does actually take a pretty fair amount of time. So probably I'd guess like a third of my day consists of actual writing.
So do you work, you know, a standard 8-hour day, or is your schedule very flexible depending on what the paper needs?
I think an 8-hour day would be like a good day. But, you know, I do, I work whatever kind of I need to in order to get stuff done. And I provide my email, I'm sorry, my cell phone really freely. So I will take phone calls from people. I spoke with someone on Friday night. I was walking with my wife to a party that we were headed to with some friends, and I ended up sitting on a bench in on Coventry Avenue or whatever it is for about half an hour talking to this guy. So it's just when duty calls, you know, I pick up the phone. And
your wife tolerates this.
Yeah, exactly. She's very patient.
Well, that's helpful. So who's the most interesting personality you've had to deal with so far?
I think that the, you know, I try not to get caught up in personalities too much. I think that's where, like, the Jimmy DeMora stuff that we're talking to earlier, you know, came from. I mean, I know a former Congressman Jim Trafficant passed away recently, and I know he would really regale journalists with his weird behavior in Washington, but all the while he was...
But it's,
you know,
a great story.
Yeah, but he's also lining his pockets, you know. So it's... I try not to get distracted by personality per se, but that being said, I mean, there are a lot of interesting personalities. I think that the thing I've spent the most time covering would probably be Ed Fitzgerald. And I don't cover politics per se, so a lot of the stuff that's happened to his campaign, it doesn't really touch me exactly. But obviously, you know, he is still, it's not like the Ed Fitzgerald candidate, you know, ceases to exist when he's Ed Fitzgerald, you know, government administrator. So there is an overlap. So I think that it's not like he's not this really exciting, effervescent personality or anything like that. But I think just watching what's happened with him has been really intriguing. And
There's a book in there somewhere.
Well, yeah, that you hear things like worst gubernatorial candidate or campaign in, you know, a generation or something like that. And I think when I try to be cautious about kind of making those judgments, because people always think like, oh, that movie I saw is the best movie I've ever seen. You know, there's sort of like that bias of immediacy. But I imagine at some point down the road, somebody's going to reflect on this and have something interesting to say about it.
Yeah, be interesting to hear that too, won't it, Brett?
People are already reflecting right now, and it hasn't even ended yet. So
no.
We'll see.
Anyway, but you did say you like to write about pop culture, you said over the break that you like hip hop. Are there particular things that you pay attention to in the music world?
You see, I was the music director of my college radio station, so like there was a point circa 8 years ago that was really, really cool.
And then you started studying tax policy.
Yeah, right. And that's just suddenly there's an inverse proportion or ratio between coolness and how much you know about tax policy. So I've kind of dropped out as far as following like the day-to-day developments and stuff like that. But you know, I'm fairly up to date with contemporary hip hop, for example, and because it's, you can find it on the radio pretty easily. So I try to, like, you know, when I have time, do that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, we'll have to call you up for a hip hop report.
Yeah, I heard a Rich Homie Quan in one of your liners earlier, so I could, you know, I can name that tune if asked or whatever. But you know,
Doug has no idea what you were talking about.
He's just smiling and nodding right now.
That just went right over my head. What? Say that again.
Rich Homie Quan. He's a hot item right now. I think he's him and Kendrick Lamar are two of the really, you know, young talents that are coming up right now. It's an exciting time, actually. But, you know, I'll save that maybe for another day.
Yeah, please do.
We did give Doug a primer on Kendrick Lamar, so he at least knows
okay.
That name.
That yeah. Name I do.
I see that kind of, like, vague sign of recollection in your eyes. So,
no, that's something.
Is that confusing that for something else?
Ricocheting inside my head and coming out the other side okay. Without really touching much. But, all right, but that's interesting, you know, and you did share that you had a musical background. Your father and your sister were in the Cleveland Orchestra Chorus.
That's correct. Yeah, they still are.
That's pretty impressive.
It's really cool. My dad has a backstage pass to Carnegie Hall that he likes to carry around his wallet and whip it out when, you know, he wants to impress someone.
No kidding.
It's ceased to impress me about, you know, 20 years ago, but...
Well, that's being his.
It hasn't stopped him from doing it still.
What, still trying to impress you or other people?
Yeah, you know, a little bit of both, I think.
Well, that's right. What does he think about his son, you know, being a journalist? I mean, isn't that kind of the polar opposite of being, you know, a minister and a journalist?
My dad was actually a political science major when he was an undergrad until he felt the call of whatever it is that you feel when you become a minister or enter that kind of life. But I think he actually, you know, he's really proud of what I do and he follows it really closely. He is a really voracious reader of political stuff and history and that kind of thing. So I, you know, he actually, is pretty plugged in with what I'm up to. And he's to some extent, I think he kind of lives vicariously through me, but.
Well, I think those habits get passed to your children though. If he was a vicarious reader and very interested in history and politics, that's the kind of stuff that gets passed on to your children. And
I suspect so.
Yeah. They learn a lot from that. I know that, I read an awful lot. And my kids have all kind of picked that up. And some of it's interesting and some of it's not. My son Mark, he reads voraciously about sports. But we'll leave the judgment of that till some other time.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, the best way to get at me is to follow me on Twitter at Andrew J. Tobias. You can also email me at atobias@cleveland.com. I have... check my email constantly, so that's you're going to get a real human being on the other end of that email if you send me something.
And he does get back to you very quickly, so go ahead and get a hold of Andrew Tobias. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We really appreciate it. Andrew Tobias of Northeast Ohio Media Group, it's been really interesting. You have a great night.
Thanks, you too.
All right.
oldest is stand-up comedian and eminent Latino Ramon Reeves II from Cleveland, Ohio, and you're listening to The Avenue. Enjoy it.
All right, welcome back to The Avenue. We really like getting those kind of, pushes for this show. Thanks for playing that. It really is cool when people do that. And, Britt, one of the things that I had prepared for when we were getting ready to come on tonight was this story in Hong Kong, because freedom really is precious and people don't realize how easily it is encroached upon. And we're kind of seeing that in Hong Kong now, aren't we?
Well, I think it's the whole thing of Hong Kong is in this bizarre state where you went from, being under British control into being under Chinese control, and you've got a government, you have local elections, but when you still have someone coming in and essentially vetting and saying who can run, it's that whole thing of it's sham democracy, sham freedom. And it's, well, what we're seeing in the streets right now in Hong Kong is that the people are finally taking a stand against it.
Well, I think we're running into a potential for serious violence there, too. CNN reported that this weekend's demonstrations followed a week of student-led boycotts and protests against what many see as the encroachment of China's political will on Hong Kong's governance, and in the face of China's decision to allow only vetted candidates to stand in the city elections for chief executive. Well, that takes away freedom. Mm-hmm. What happens if they nominate somebody that's never been in government before but is loyal to Beijing as opposed to, Hong Kong?
And that is the fear. And the current executive has been trying to allay fears, to calm protesters down, to have them, go home and stay out the streets. But it's a spark's been ignited, I think, in Hong Kong.
I think you're right. There are a lot of people out there, and students are kind of leading it. And the problem is, if it leads to violence, it could be really serious there, because this has been bubbling for a while. Now, you mentioned off air a little bit that you have been to Hong Kong. I didn't know that before tonight.
I did. I lived in Hong Kong after I graduated from graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Hong Kong on a State Department scholarship to learn Mandarin.
Seriously?
Which never really kind of made sense, because if people familiar with Hong Kong know that they speak Cantonese there.
Yeah.
So it was just Mandarin in the classroom and then Cantonese out on the streets. But I was actually there over the 10th anniversary of the return of Hong Kong from British control, returning it to Chinese control. And there were protests and everything. There was a lot going on. And, we all were told basically to, stay out of it, because there's no guarantee. If you get picked up in a protest, Chinese authorities aren't very kind to protesters, as we've kind of
seen
history. So it was one of those things where we all kind of like laid low. And it was this bizarre. There were a lot of staged events. There was, fireworks displays and, public concerts and all these things celebrating Chinese rule over Hong Kong. But there's still an undercurrent in Hong Kong. It manifests itself in kind of silent protests, day to day life. Just the fact that even though Mandarin Chinese is the official language, it's what's taught in school, they're not picking it up in the street. It's still Cantonese. They refuse to switch over and use simplified characters. They use the traditional Chinese characters. So there's a lot going on of essentially cultural resistance to Beijing still in Hong Kong. And that's very prevalent in Hong Kong and then the southern parts of the county or the country in Guangzhou and some other areas, where it's kind of like Beijing shouldn't be making the rules for us.
Well, and Hong Kong has been kind of a freewheeling enterprise zone for a long time. People have been kind of used to doing whatever they wanted to do to make money and have their own lifestyle. And, China has been, over the years, gradually starting to squeeze Hong Kong. And the question is, how long will that go on before something explodes? Or everybody leaves? Or both, unfortunately. Well, that must have been an interesting experience. So did you stay inside the whole time while you were there?
I did. I was a good scholarship recipient and did not want to cause waves or get picked up by the police or anything. So, like I said, there are some times where you just don't want to push your luck, and I decided that was one of them.
No, that makes perfect sense. Unfortunately, that says something about our government, though, basically saying, if you get caught up in something, inadvertently even, that they wouldn't go get you out or take care of you. There was a day when such things would be considered an act of war. For instance, the beheading of our journalist over in Iraq there, Mr. Foley. at one point in time, that would be considered an act of war.
That would be enough provocation to take action,
Well, anyway, so we're going to follow that story because it's interesting, and it is, you know, the gradual erosion of freedom is starting to become a serious problem, and students and a lot of protesters now are staking their lives, ultimately, I think, on being able to cause Beijing to back off, and I don't know that they will. I think that's pretty interesting. Anyway, it was great having Andrew Tobias on here tonight to talk about what the things that he has been involved in, because he is right in the thick of it in terms of county government, and that really is his beat, not politics per se, but county government. And so I think he's got a unique perspective, and he's really got an interesting background. So I think he's a great addition to the paper, and I think he really is somebody that's going to be, I think, a good reporter for us down the road. He's got the right attitude. He's got a lot of curiosity, and I don't detect a lot of particular biases on his part in terms of how he approaches his job. So, cool.
As a good journalist should be.
Yeah, exactly. And even though he's a graduate of a journalism school. I didn't even know Otterbein had a journalism school.
Well, seeing as you didn't even know where Otterbein was.
I don't. I've heard the name somewhere, but you know, most people think that has something to do with wildlife, but it's not. Anyway, speaking of violence and things going on, now, one of the things that you wonder about is some of the other media. There is a journalist on her self-titled show. Is it Melissa Harris Perry? Have you heard of this woman?
Oh, is she on MSNBC?
Yeah, she is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that we've had this incident in Oklahoma where a gentleman took the head off of one of his coworkers, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And she insisted that it is a story that I read as a workplace violence story, even though this guy got fired for trying to convert people to Islam. And the signature of Islam is kind of beheading people. So you kind of wonder, do these people in journalism or some of these other media outlets ever live in the real world? It really puzzles the heck out of me. I don't know if... she doesn't get the idea that many tenets of the Islamic faith are really hostile to other religions.
Well, and I think with Melissa Harris Perry, her background of work has kind of shown this failure to take stories into full consideration and context. Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing of don't change up a story. Like, he was fired, as you said, for trying to convert people. And part of apparently witnesses... what he was saying while everything was going down was to that point. But she's also someone who has made fun of the Romneys for adopting a...
she's the one. Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember that story.
The Romneys, one of his sons, I believe, had adopted a mm-hmm. African baby, and she was making fun of the family for that. She's constantly taking things out of context and kind of assigning her own... cultural significance to story or taking cultural significance out. So it's one of those, that doesn't surprise me when you mentioned that she was trying to frame this story in terms of a workplace violence situation.
Yeah, and I think she's a law professor, I think at Emory or one of the other schools in Atlanta. And it makes you wonder about what the heck they're teaching our students, doesn't it? Now, another story very similar, I can't believe that GQ has a Washington correspondent, but they do. Her name is Anna Marie Cox, and so she went on MSNBC and basically said that Christian value voters wants what the Islamicists want. So she's equating Christians with Islamicists that want to violently conflate government and religion. And you have to shake your head, how crazy.
How do you
that?
Connect A and B?
I have no idea. Anyway, she was talking, she said a little while ago, I was talking about the serious situation that Americans are in and the incompetence and lack of accountability, but Americans are souring on our form of government. Well, the Value Voters Conference has another idea about what our form of government should be. It looks a little bit of what the Islamicists want. So she is, in fact, equating Islamic extremism with Christianity. And I don't understand how people get away with that kind of stuff because it's so wrong. I know people have referred to the Law of Moses, which has a lot of prescriptions and things like that, but that was superseded by a new covenant. The Quran has not been superseded by a new covenant, and that's the big issue. So that's what they need. They need a new covenant, a new testament to supersede all of those things that were in the Quran. Stacey Dash, you know her? She was the star of the movie and TV series Clueless.
And she's now a commentator on Fox News.
She is. She appeared at the Media Research Center's 2014 Dishonors Gala. I'd like to have been there. She ripped Hollywood as being full of hypocrites. She explained how the city's residents don't practice what they preach. Want proof? There are no movies made in Hollywood anymore. They make them in places like Georgia, Louisiana, North Carolina, Cleveland. And you know why? Lower taxes. They are hypocrites. She also implored right-leaning Americans to get involved in the industry, saying that now we as conservatives must put our money where our mouths are and that we want to produce films and TV shows that represent the United States of America like we believe it to be. We can't wait for anyone else to do it.
Well, I mean, that's to the point of your previous two stories. If the individuals who are creating the work and creating the movies and the TV and creating that messaging, if they're coming from a liberal mindset, yep, of course that's going to be how the message is going to be put out, with that same kind of connotation, with that same kind of background.
Now, I wish Darby O'Hare were to comment on this, but she said, one of the other comments she made at this event was, this week I found out that online that I have been bleaching my skin so that I can appear whiter to appear on Fox News, which is totally ridiculous. Anyway, the things that they will tell to make fun of former liberals that now are conservative. But in a totally unrelated comment, you have no idea how many of those 5-ounce plastic bottles that you know the TSA approve of Clorox bleach it takes to fill a bathtub in a hotel. That's her comment on bleaching her skin to look more white.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Anyway, so that was Stacey Dash, by the way. Pretty interesting comments. We have, you know, some interesting stuff. We're going to talk about our fantasy football league and my total embarrassment. No, we're not. We're going to stay away from my embarrassment. Let's talk about your team and the community team and teams that are doing well. Not my team. Anyway, we'll be speaking with the commish when we come back from break. And we have, of course, some other interesting things to talk about, including Doug's pile of fun. We always have a pile of fun with this. I keep, you know, a list of things that I haven't gotten to use in past events. We could go another 4 hours just on my pile of fun. You're listening to The Avenue. We'll be right back.
This is Peter Kersenow of the Kersenow Report. If you want to be smarter, taller, and better looking, listen to The Avenue.
And we know that there is nobody smarter, taller, and better looking than us on The Avenue. This is Doug McGill along with Brittany Williams. And you can get a hold of us at 216-901-0945. Tweet us at The Avenue Radio or post a message on Facebook at The Avenue Radio. And coming directly from the entertainment capital of North America, the one and only commissioner of The Avenue Football League, Mark. How are you doing?
Good evening. How is everybody today?
Good. All right, Mark. This is it. We're, what, fourth week into the season, so things are getting interesting in our fantasy football league, isn't it?
Well, bye weeks are definitely playing a role in what's going on out there. Doug, you got to make sure to take your kicker out if he's not playing this week. But
that's true.
The good news is the rest of your team killed it. You have scored the most points this week and are climbing out of the cellar.
You're kidding.
You're no longer being last place.
Well, yep. I consider it strategic thinking on my part in terms of changing my my entire roster of the last couple of weeks. So I'm impressed with myself.
The overhaul was wonderful. Also having a good week was my team, the Hometown Warriors. They scored 85 points, and the Lakeside Warriors also put up some good points this week. First place team, Avenue Spurt, fine team. They're going to still stay in first this week, it looks like.
Who's running that team? Is it the Avenues community team?
Yeah, the Avenues community team.
So the computer is running that team.
Yeah, it's basically running solo.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Interesting.
The computer is smarter than all of us.
How embarrassing. Well, what am I going to do with my quarterback? I don't know. Jay Cutler didn't do that well today, Mark.
Well, considering what you got on the waiver wire out there, there's not too much to go get. You might want to stick with Jay for a while. he usually struggles. Green Bay is a tough game for them. That's a divisional matchup, and it usually ends up being very entertaining.
Did you see what Aaron Rodgers did?
Oh, he was he's my quarterback,
and of course.
I watched every second of what he did, and it was amazing. He looked like the old Aaron Rodgers of old, the guy that we remember. It was quite fun to see. But you know what was even better than that? I know the most exciting thing we have is the Browns playing on Sunday. That's the most exciting thing for us. But second to that is watching Pittsburgh lose in the closing second to Tampa Bay.
I know, Tampa Bay in Pittsburgh.
Mike Lennon and Tampa Bay score on a last-minute drive to beat Pittsburgh.
Who?
Exactly, Mike Lennon, the most average quarterback out there. The kind of guy that's going to throw like 200 yards a game and a touchdown every game and nothing else. Mike Lennon. He led a touchdown drive with 40 seconds left. It was glorious. Great pass to Vincent Jackson inside the 10. Amazing. The look on Ben Roethlisberger's face is a look I want to see every single Sunday. And in 2 weeks, we get the chance to make sure he has that look on his face.
Well, we do again, don't we? And I think we've got a good shot. They'll be playing us here in Cleveland, and I think our team's getting better. You know, if we can fix our defense. Amazingly enough, I didn't think I'd be saying that this year, that we'd have problems with defense and special teams, but we do.
Well, I just wrote an article about this today. The next five games will really define what kind of team we have, and the reason being we're playing Tennessee, who just got destroyed by the Colts. We're playing Pittsburgh. We're going to play Oakland. We're going to play Tampa Bay. Ooh. We're going to play Jacksonville. These are all bottom teams on the bottom of the barrel. These are all teams we could realistically go 5-0. We're as good as a team as we think we're becoming.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
And then you've got to match up with Cincinnati and then Houston, which is another team we can beat. And all of a sudden you have Josh Gordon back. So you go through a good stretch here. You play really well, and then you have your best weapon coming back to you at the end of the season. It's not inconceivable for them to, A, have a winning record, and B, you know, at least be in the playoff picture by midseason.
I like the way you think. You are an optimist, aren't you? Of course, you're a Cleveland Browns fan.
That's all we got is hope.
No.
Just like I had hope that your team would come out of the cellar. But you know who you're putting into the cellar is your son. Your son is going to go into the cellar.
Which one?
Douglas.
Oh, Douglas. Sorry about that. I know that will frustrate him tremendously. Has he called you for advice?
No. I missed his call today. But a few things we can add on to your team. There's a few players out there I think you should go take a look at. Jerick McKinnon, running back from the Vikings. He's the backup to the starter who just scored 3 touchdowns in relief of Adrian Peterson, who someone is still playing on their roster. I'm not going to name names, Darvio. also, he ran for over 130 yards today as the backup, so they're excited about him with all his speed. Dwayne Allen, the tight end for the Colts, touchdowns 2 weeks in a row. If you're having quarterback troubles, Mike Lennon is pretty steady. He will get you points, and he has a good rapport with Vincent Jackson, as we saw today. Also, 2 wide receivers to keep a look at. Jarius Wright with the Vikings. He had a monster day in over 100 yards with Teddy Bridgewater throwing him the ball. And also Andre Holmes with the Raiders. He had 74 yards and a touchdown.
So I can't imagine we'd pick anybody from the Raiders, but that's unfair to them, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, how consistently good have they been?
Not very. They lost to Miami and London today, didn't they?
Yes, they did. That was Miami had a very, very good game. You put on a very good show for, you know.
Yeah, who was the quarterback for Miami today?
Ryan Tannehill. They're having some trouble with him, but he threw up 2 touchdowns today. He looked pretty good. Mike Wallace had a great game. Lamar Miller scored 2 touchdowns. The Dolphins looked very good.
Interesting. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. Who was the big surprise today?
The big surprise today besides, the running back for the Vikings, Matt Asate, he scored 3 touchdowns rushing. He was a huge surprise today. Atlanta's defense is pretty bad, but for him to put up 3 touchdowns like that, pretty big surprise. Eddie Royal had 2 more touchdowns today. Terrence Williams put up 2 touchdowns, and their Dallas is just kicking the crud out of New Orleans right now.
Yeah, where did
he had a monster day?
Where did Eddie Royal come from? Holy smokes, what's happening to him?
Well, he got drafted by Denver and had a great rookie season and fell out of favor. But the one guy that we need to make note of that is currently on your team and helping you get to where you're at, Steve Smith, who got released by the Panthers, has gone over 100 yards in 3 of 4 games this season. He scored 2 touchdowns against his former team this week, the Carolina Panthers, including one off a tip ball, an amazing catch, and he just broke for the end zone.
How cool is that? We're gonna talk about that and some more of my good general managership when we come back in just a couple minutes with the commissioner, Mark McGill. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Tom Licks. I'm the founder and chairman of Cleveland Whiskey. You're listening to The Avenue. And please, don't drink and drive.
And I will tell you this, that Tom Licks makes a great product that a lot of local celebrities, including our very own producer, has enjoyed in the past. Anyway, we're speaking with Mark McGill, the commish of The Avenue Radio Show, Fantasy Football League. And we were talking about some of the surprises today. Mark, tell us a couple other surprises today.
Well, Houston beat Buffalo today. That was kind of a big surprise.
Yeah, that is to me, too.
Houston, if they had the right quarterback, would be a very, very good team. They got a good defense with J.J. Watt, who is just a physical presence out there.
Didn't he score a touchdown today?
He did score a touchdown today. He actually had a touchdown catch, I think, in week one as well. I mean, when you have a player that that talented, you kind of use him the best way you can.
Okay.
But, yeah, he had an 80-yard interception. For a defensive lineman to have an interception return of 80 yards is kind of impressive, just a little bit.
All right. Now I have to ask a serious question here. Brittany, how's your team doing, and who is making the decisions now?
As I have no idea how my team is doing, Coach Lally is making all the decisions, and as I'm not in last place, I'm cool with that. So
you don't care.
I have no idea. I have no idea who these people are. I don't know who's on my team. All I care about is that I'm not in last place.
You're a hands-off owner, huh?
Yeah.
So you give inspirational speeches. That's what it's about.
I do. And when the players get hurt, I tell Coach Lally to send them flowers and things. But aside from that, I'm not making any
decisions. So you want them to come back?
Yes.
All happy.
Oh, man. All right. Some other recommendations for us. Who's the best kicker out there, Mark? You know, should we pay attention to our kickers?
Always pay attention to your kicker.
Really?
I mean, Phil Dawson put up 17 points today. Nick Seriously? Novak with San Diego put up 15 points today. Kicker can make or break your team. In one of my leagues, I'm playing against my cousin Kevin, and he's actually beating me right now because Nick Novak put up 15 points, and my kicker only put up 4. 15 points is essentially what you're trying to get out of a running back. So when you have a kicker, for instance, you're looking at these games, you're looking at the teams that are not very good on defense, Atlanta, Jacksonville, those kind of teams, and you're looking to maximize, you know, when you're picking up kickers, you're like, all right, who's going to score a lot of points? Well, who's playing a bad defense? Well, of course, San Diego played Jacksonville this week, wiped the floor with them, and the kicker put up 5 field goals, I believe, or something like that.
Wow.
4 field goals and a couple extra points. It makes a huge difference. Every point matters, especially in a league where we're doing a point system right now. Every point matters. This week, you're down by 50 points to the leader in the league, and your kicker gets you 10 extra points. You're getting closer.
All right. Now, do you change your roster based upon who you think you're going to be facing next or who certain teams are facing next week?
Oh, absolutely. I call it the Detroit Lions rule. One year, I was helping my brother, Gil, with his league, and he had quarterback issues and, you know, defenses weren't playing well for him. So basically, this was the season that Detroit went 0-16. So no matter who was playing Detroit, that's where I'd pick up players. I'd pick up that defense every week and whatever quarterback that was on the waiver wire that was playing them. That's a lot of how I make my decisions, who we play. Certain players you never take out. If you have Jordy Nelson, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have
Brandon Marshall, DeMarco Murray right now. Certain players, no matter what team they're playing, you always, always play them. But if you got any question between your players and who they're, you know, maybe you got a Mike Evans and Cecil Shorts, and you know that Mike Evans is playing the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't a very good pass defense, you're going with Mike Evans that week.
Interesting. So there's a lot of strategy behind all this. You must spend a lot of time on this.
More than I probably should, but I will not tell that to my bosses or my fiance.
Okay, we won't ask. But put her on the phone, would you?
I don't know. Give me a weird look right now.
That's abnormal?
Nope. That's a
par for the course
in the McGill household. It's par for the course.
It's par for women in the McGill household. Yeah.
I mean, you know, they say the apple does not fall far from the tree. So I am my father's son. So the rolling of the eyes of women in the McGill household, it's transferable between households.
And I get that from Brittany every week as well. So.
Well, it's not just at home. It's at the office or wherever you go.
It's everyone.
Well, thank you for that. All right, Mark, we have a little bit over a minute left. So quick advice, biggest things to do this week. What about defenses?
Oh, well, defenses, make sure you pick up anybody who's playing Jacksonville. I mean, that's the way to go. Jacksonville or the Raiders. The Raiders right now are, I think Derek Carr went down with an injury. If you see a backup quarterback playing that's never started a game, you go after that team hard. I mean, that's the way to go. But you got good defenses, and Tennessee had a bad week this week, but they're a good defense to watch. You're looking at the Carolina Panthers had a bad week this week, but they're going to come back and have a good defense. You want guys that create a lot of turnovers. San Francisco 49ers defense is starting to look like the San Francisco 49ers of old. They beat Nick Foles in Philadelphia up this week. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is amazing because San Francisco's been having its problems. So it is important to look at, what teams are playing in the week and pick a defense that's playing a really weak offensive team, and that'll improve your point.
I picked up Miami from one of my leagues this week. Miami put up 17 points for me. I may pull out a victory where two of my wide receivers went down with injuries just because I picked up a good defense and they were playing a bad team in Oakland.
Interesting. All right, well, that's the report from the commission this week. Mark, thanks so much for doing that. You have a safe week, and we'll be talking to you again next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, that's Mark McGill, the commissioner of the now famous Avenue Radio fantasy football team. And we'll be coming back in just a minute. We're going to be having Doug's famous pile of fun. You're listening to The Avenue. Said famous, you said infamous.
I say infamous.
All right, thanks so much. And by the way, it is Confucius's birthday, just so you ought to know. And Moon Unit Zappa was born on this day as well. That's quite a juxtaposition.
That's quite the contrast there. So I'm kind of surprised you didn't go with Hillary Duff, also born in 1987.
Yeah, well, she was. And Naomi Watts in 1968. A lot of strange people. By the way, I want to give a shout out to the truck. Let There Be Bacon. The Food Network has been sponsoring the Great Food Truck Race on Sunday nights for quite some time now, and Let There Be Bacon is in third place, so they need your votes. Go to foodnetwork.com and vote for Let There Be Bacon, our Cleveland's own entry into the food truck race, which is pretty funny. And by the way, this Wednesday, Al Stewart's at the Roxino. Thursday, Leanne Rimes at the Roxino. And then Motown the Musical kicks off at Playhouse Square this Saturday as well. And I probably shouldn't announce this because I don't want anybody else to go, but next Tuesday, the 7th of October, Peter White is having a charity concert at the Roxino in favor of breast cancer, and he's just outstanding. If you've not heard him play before, he is an amazing acoustic guitarist. So he'll be at the Roxino. You have to go to, I can't tell you where, It's a different radio station to get tickets, but they're the only ones that have it right now. But it's only $20, and it'd be well worth going to. He's really good. So, all right. Anyway, you have an iPhone, don't you, Britt?
I have two of them, sadly.
Actually, you've got two of them in front of you, both of them tuned to Facebook and Twitter and waiting for comments. Now, you're not interested in getting the iPhone 6, are you?
No, because I'm assuming that you're going to talk about how it bends.
Yeah, there's this rumor out there that it bends, that, you know, it's a real problem.
They said that hipsters wearing skinny jeans are very upset with this.
Yeah, I know. I've had a real problem with that myself. Anyway, you know, you've heard of Uri Geller, and he says that the bending of Apple's iPhone 6 can be explained by mental forces. He said he's bent a lot of his old Blackberries before using mental force. So we think that's what's causing the iPhone 6 bending problem. But you haven't heard about that.
No.
No. All right, Kyoto, Japan. A Japanese firm is showing off its group control technology with a team of robot cheerleaders who roll the top balls and perform a synchronized routine. You think human cheerleaders are at risk here? Except maybe a case. Maybe they'll use robots at case.
That would make sense. They've got nothing better to do with their time than make robot cheerleaders.
Seriously.
Though I can't say anything because Joe, who was our other sound engineer who's been on the show before, you missed it last week. He has a robot R2-D2, which he had in the hallway, that to voice commands. You can make him dance. You can make him do all this other stuff. And then he also has a cup holder. So yeah, that isn't too far off.
It's actually a beer bottle holder.
There you go.
I like this. Anyway, these are called the Murata cheerleaders, created by Kyoto Electronics and Robotics Company, Murata Manufacturing. They have rolling balls for lower halves, and each one is equipped with three gyro sensors to detect pitch, roll, and yaw for 360-degree control. Anyway, somehow or another, I don't think the effect at a football game of watching a bunch of robots roll around would be the same.
Just running around on a track.
Can you imagine one of the guys tossing one of those up in the air and catching them?
Yeah, that's right. They'd be having ambulances stand by for the cheerleaders, which they normally don't do. It makes me think about giving a shout-out to Kathleen Haley, who used to be a cheerleader for Notre Dame, by the way. She's a friend of mine, and she was really very good. So shout out to Kathleen for no good reason. Anyway, in New York, there's a mail carrier accused of hoarding more than 40,000 pieces of undelivered mail, and his name is Joseph Brucato, 67. He kept more than 2,500 pounds of mail. What do you do with 2,500 pounds of mail?
Is he just doing that because he doesn't want to deliver it?
It dates back to 2005, and he told the court during his arraignment this Wednesday that maybe depression were to blame for his behavior.
Well, that's like that. Wasn't there that guy in, or a mail carrier in Alabama who was just going to a field or like a ditch and just throwing the packages into the ditch?
It's crazy. People do strange things. Usually, maybe working for the post office does that to you.
Could be.
All right. This kind of thing we're going to see more of. Enfield, Connecticut. Police in Connecticut say they are seeking charges against a high school girl who handed out pot-laced lollipops to classmates. Which created quite a scene, I'm sure, in Home Ec or whatever. She told police she had obtained the lollipops laced with THC from California and admitted to distributing them at school. And that would have been fun at cheerleader practice, wouldn't it?
You would definitely liven some things up.
All right. And, I don't know why I thought about this, but relative to post office stories, in Vancouver, British Columbia, I was just very close to Vancouver last week, a British Columbia man said a postal worker who failed to deliver a package to his porch left a note behind explaining why. And the note said, bear at door, could not deliver package. I think that would be a pretty good reason not to deliver a package if there's a bear at his door.
I don't think that was in their clause, rain, sleet, shine, or
bears. Lions, tigers. No. Yeah, I think you get a pass. Like, unlike the dude who was hoarding, several tons of mail in his apartment, bear at the door, I'm not going to mess with that either.
Yeah, he was lining his ferret cage. He actually taught them how to dance and sing.
All right. Yep. Taught them how to dance and sing. All right. And you think scientists are serious? You know, you wonder what the heck they put in all these scientific journals because nobody ever reads them. Anyway, a group of five Swedish scientists revealed they have a wager to see who can work the most Bob Dylan quotes into their research articles.
Nice.
All right. The scientists from Karolinska Institute in Stockholm said their game began 17 years ago when professors John Jönberg and Eddie Weitzberg wrote a piece about intestinal gas and dubbed it nitric oxide and inflammation. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Nice. I wrote in a paper in college, the professor shall remain nameless in the middle of the paper. Just wrote, you're not reading this. Got an A-plus on the paper.
God
and you've been
you.
Listening to The Avenue. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to tune in next week.